Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone. For us as Unitarian Universalists, those words by Reverend Wayne Arneson, which is reading number 689 in our hymnal, gray hymnal, has been shared a million times over. Can't think of how many times I've heard it. And that's because the theme of courage is everywhere in religion. David and Goliath, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, fought scores of battles with great courage and determination, even with ill-prepared armies and never with fear or cowardice. In Hinduism, courage and bravery and patience appear as the first few of characteristics of Dharma. And in Judaism, the Hebrew term for courage, ometz or ometz lev, literally means strength or heart strength. Ometz is a core principle and ethical trait with which each of us is innately endowed as human beings formed in a divine image in Judaism. The spiritual trait isn't the absence of fear, but the inner strength to move forward anyway. And for us as Unitarian Universalists, there's that reading, among others. Take courage, friends. The way is often hard, the path is never clear, and the stakes are very, very high. And then there's the sense of courage from faith, of another faith tradition that inspires me a lot, which is the Serenity Prayer from Alcoholics Anonymous. The Serenity Prayer is the Alcoholics Anonymous prayer recited at the end of every meeting, and the purpose of this prayer is to serve as a daily reflection. Serenity meaning the acceptance on a minute-by-minute basis. And the short version of that prayer reads, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. And then there's a lot of public monikers related to courage. Have the courage to be vulnerable. Be your authentic self. Be brave enough to ask for help. Share your story. These statements have become hallmark greetings of an author and speaker, Brené Brown, and other self-help public figures. Vulnerability and courage culture are Brené Brown's bread and butter. Her TED Talk on vulnerability, which is now about 12 years old, has over 19 million views on YouTube alone. And that's just the one original video, not all the places it's been reposted over years and years. For Brown, vulnerability can be defined as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. She calls it the place, the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, and creativity, the source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. Now, I'm going to admit to you, usually, okay, I want to say 99% of the time, the sources for a sermon I've read. But I have actually not read most of Brené Brown. So what I'm talking about this morning is really the courage culture that has been wrapped around her, that has been promoted from her. Some people I love, maybe some of you, love her work. And have found an example to follow in vulnerability as a genesis of creating more love in their lives. But if vulnerability is also a systemically built characteristic in your life, I don't know if love springs from each of those experiences. And often courage can be both necessary and punished. Brown says that weakness often stems from a lack of vulnerability. When we don't acknowledge how and when we're tender, we're more at risk of being hurt. And her suggestion is that if we own our story, it can be hard, but it's not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from our story. She suggests that embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy, the experiences that might make us the most vulnerable. I don't think that Muhammad Ali Moharadi would buy into the courage culture or that version of joy based on some of his experiences in the last few years with the banking industry. Moharadi is a Michigan-based educator, and you're going to love this, Glenda, and my other poets here at UU of SCV. He founded this online learning platform called Persian Poetics in 2018, where he translates and he teaches poetry and teaches the Persian language online. So because it's online, most of his students pay him by methods like PayPal, the same platform that we use here at UU of SCV to collect our donations online. And without warning, one day, Moharadi's account was frozen on multiple occasions by the financial institutions that he was using due to his ethnic and religious background. As you can imagine, this experience had a huge impact on his life and his ability to make a living. Almost immediately after he opened his business, he said students' PayPal payments were getting returned or delayed because they would use in the comments phrases like Iranian poetry or Persian poetry class. Now, Moharadi didn't shy away from the risks of emotional exposure at this point. He reached out to PayPal, explaining that every term flagged and how it related to his business, who he was, what he did, who his students were, where they were located. In one exchange, PayPal asked him for an explanation of the reference to Persian rather than admit their error. Moharadi said that his account was frozen 3 times and that more than 2 dozen payments made to him for classes he had already taught were flagged and then returned to the students. He opened a business account. He hoped that would avail him of the situation. And then in July 2022, Moharadi moved to Patreon, another platform for content creators and businesses to run a subscription service. But then that company, too, froze his account and withheld almost $2,000, saying he was located in a country that was sanctioned by the United States. Michigan may feel sometimes like another world from California, but I can promise you that it is in the United States. Now, Moharadi inherited Iranian citizenship, as many people with families who have, with parents or grandparents who are immigrants from Iran. He was able to get citizenship that way, but he was born and he was raised in Michigan. And he established Persian Poetic as a limited liability company, meaning that it was an American business operating as an American citizen while living in the United States. And Moharadi sent Patreon documents proving his U.S. citizenship, and they shut down his account anyway. Patreon returned the $2,000 he had in his account to everyone who tried to pay him. Once more, he was left without the money he was due for the services he already provided for students who wanted to pay him. Moharadi has started asking his students not to mention words like Persia, Iran, or Islam in their payments, despite it being the content that he's teaching. The risk isn't worth it, he said. And in fact, some of his students have stopped taking his courses because they were worried about their own banks being flagged by continuing to participate and pay him. And this whole ordeal has cost him a way to make a living, and he was vulnerable. He spoke up authentically. And while I'm not left with the hope or the joy as the courage culture promises in hearing this story, and neither was Moharadi, even as a poet. And he isn't alone. The Institute of Social Policy and Understanding actually reports that 1 in 4 American Muslims faces hurdles when banking in the United States. And when it comes to business accounts, 1 in 5 Muslim businesses report challenges on sending or receiving payments, more than twice as compared to the regular public. I know all of us have probably had trouble with an online payment system at some point, but this is a lot of people in comparison to our whole population. So was Moharati filled with a sense of belonging when he dared to confront the banks? In fact, just the opposite occurred. He was told he was high risk just for his name, his ethnicity, his profession. And after many vulnerable actions, ones that Brown commends and promotes, instead of feeling more comfortable, more at home in his life, he said, frankly, it's gotten to a point where I may even not want to permanently live in America anymore. You yell at me in the supermarket. You block my payments. You stare at me funny. This creativity I've used and these experiences have made me not even want to be here. There are many embedded forms of discrimination in which Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as well as queer and transgender and disabled people, are routinely vulnerable when interacting with regular social institutions necessary for daily life in the U.S., like being unable to get a driver's license as an undocumented immigrant if you live in 31 different states, like laws that limit your ability to be called by your true name or your pronouns if you are a transgender child, like facing racial discrimination from landlords when trying to rent as a Black family, like being able to access disability benefits when you're newly disabled, like using a U.S. bank while Muslim. These examples aren't interpersonal biases or just exceptions to a rule, but they present the denial of basic resources. Moharati's story is not unique, nor did the bank decide to change its ways. Instead, it showed how profit over people is just a system working as it was designed to make people vulnerable or susceptible to anguish, humiliation, poverty. It's impossible in these instances of survival to see vulnerability as a choice or an asset. Dr. Jen Jackson writes that having courage to finish that swim meet or ask for that big raise isn't like having the courage to be Black in a country that wants us dead. Dr. Carrie Yazid talks about how it requires a certain level of privilege to access those fruits of vulnerability that courage culture is talking about choosing vulnerability as a practice. Honestly, she says, sometimes I don't have the strength to be strong because I am truly tired of fighting. There are days where I want to rip off the Superwoman cape because I can no longer see the point of being a strong Black woman. I am tired of the internal pain that I pretend doesn't exist. Yes, I get tired of being resilient. So another courage culture writer wrote, Mark Munson wrote, that being vulnerable and thus more resilient might diminish the powers of our flaws. Maybe in order to become more resilient, more formidable, you must first bear your flaws and weaknesses, he said, for the world to see. In doing so, they may lose power over you, allowing you to live your life with more honesty and intention. I'm pretty sure the banks, or the insurance company, the police, and by goodness, the DMV, do not lose power over how one's flaws or weaknesses are managed. There are a multitude of ways in which marginalized people are required to be courageous, to participate in systems that manage their or the survival of their families without regard for the risks. The cost of courage, Dr. Jackson said, was for a Black person in America is high because we're trying to find also the courage to speak against racism, the courage to protest the killings of innocent Black people, and the courage to fight for equality in a country that hates our existence. So I do have to say that we do probably have Brené Brown to thank for examining the theme of vulnerability, for an invitation to look at the path of emotional exposure that we and other people take in our congregation, in our personal lives, in our relationships. But this is a privilege. Our Soul Matters subscription package journey into vulnerability is a privilege. And privilege may be undisrupted and perhaps even enhanced by vulnerability. Because to choose courage is easier when the consequences are fewer. In particular, by telling white women to be courageous and vulnerable, Brené Brown, a white woman and public speaker, replicates this dance of white supremacy, encouraging women with race-based privilege and a leg up in the racial wealth divide to bare our souls, promote ourselves, and not apologize or hold ourselves accountable for it. Dangerous in a world that is willing to use children as political pawns, as we heard in our prayer today. Dangerous in a world in which we need so much of our energy to go towards building coalitions and rising up against justice, rising up for justice and against oppression. There's also times, Dr. Yazeed says, when we would speak up as black women, that when white women and men might become upset or cry because of what we've said. The exhausting defense mechanism that's worked for centuries to make people not want to share their truths over and over again when it involves some sort of marginalization or difference. I think there's alternatives to this in community, particularly in a spiritual community like a congregation. Some that I have met here, these practices that I've met here among you at UU of SCV, and one is our covenant to practicing gratitude and monitoring our own participation that we use in our small group ministries. In that program here at our congregation, we have this practice of holding up and holding out gratitude for the gifts of another person's sharing. The practice allows us to listen and not defend our own truth or question the validity of someone's point or even decide if we agree or disagree, but instead to look at the gift of another person sharing their truth as a challenge for our own living and loving. This practice is possible because the group also practices monitoring their own participation, a self-supervised way of disclosure, meaning that each person has the invitation to choose the timing, the depth, and the frequency of their vulnerability. And everyone else has the obligation to listen, holding up and out the wisdom, rather than turning to what does it mean for me, or how my experience is different. How deep you go is not a badge to earn in spiritual community or a litmus test of your faithfulness. It is for you to decide. And no matter how below the surface of your life you decide to share, there is value there. Because it's not a performance. It's not a $100,000 speaker fee. It's not to gain power over anyone else. It's to encourage others and to live your faith journey alongside other people as a means of encouraging both yourself and each other. We need spaces, we need congregations that can be a place where we ask one another, how is it with your spirit today? And we mean it, and we listen to what we hear back. I want to close with a prayer from Enfleshed, a resource for queer and trans love and faith community, which talks a little bit about the doubting Thomas figure in the gospel account, according to John in the New Testament or the Christian scriptures. In this part of the gospel, that Thomas wanted to touch Jesus's wounds to know his pain and his suffering for his ministry was real. And now there's different interpretations. We won't go there now. That's another Sunday, of whether Jesus actually allowed him to touch the wounds or not, what happened. But the story of Thomas is mostly retold as a lesson in the power of having faith alone to believe in Jesus. But I think for Unitarian Universalism, for me, it says something about courage culture to look at Thomas and ask, why do you got to touch someone else's suffering to believe the great suffering that other people endure? And that we each deserve a choice in true mutual relationship. Thomas needed to feel his way into belief. He depended on the vulnerability of Jesus to help him get back in touch with his own belief after so much violence was done. But when the story ends, though transformation did occur, we did not see Jesus begin this courage culture tour of his wounds, of his encounters. Here is the enfleshed prayer for us today. You do not owe anyone access to your trauma because you hope for their solidarity. Even Jesus was choosy about whom he shared the details of his body's memories. Some hearts are in the process of opening, and through you they may believe. Others are not there, not ready, not able to receive the gift of your vulnerability. Your story of survival, of persisting, of remaining is precious. You can be selective about when and how and with whom you share it. Yes, your scars can be a powerful testimony. Offer them courageously to those that you choose, on your terms, on your time. You get to practice wisdom and discernment about when and how you do. Strangers, knowingly and not, will feel entitled to see the marks on your hands, to reach for the wounds in your sides, because you ask them to care. But remember that you and your people and movements for life have nothing to prove to be deserving of love, deserving of freedom, deserving of friendship. So let your story be an invitation into collective liberation, not a plea for the crumbs of others' convictions. You can tell the truth in ways that aliven you. You can be honest without being objectified. The power of spirit lives in your testimony, in every ghost who lingers in your story, every saint who made you strong, every bit of holy that helps you endure. They are deserving of dignity, as are you. And when you discern that the right people, the right spirit, the right moment has come, the intimate truths of your story can be shared like a sacrament. Blessed, broken open, nourishment for the hungry, a feast in remembrance of the beloved.